Hi everyone, I'm Dr. Maggie Ray here from Creating Positive Futures Academic Coaching, where we are on a mission to help high school and college students earn better grades with less stress by developing the time management, organization, and study skills that they need to reach their goals. And the whole less stress element of all of this really comes into play when we're talking about college. College is a huge source of stress, and that's why I love hosting this Your Teen Ready for College series each summer to help put together some of the experts on college admissions and parenting and psychology and education and test prep and all these different components that go into the process that can stress everyone out and just help you all know what to do to navigate the process more successfully and with less stress for you and your teen. And that's such a big challenge, I think, especially when it comes to figuring out how involved to be in the process, how to help your kids manage that, what to do if your teen maybe doesn't seem to be stepping up to the plate or if they're way too anxious. And it's especially challenging if you have anything else going on that might be making this harder for them, like any sort of complexity of any sort, like ADHD or anxiety or learning differences or anything like that. And so I really wanted to bring someone in who could help speak to that and how to navigate that as a parent. And Elaine and Diane are the perfect people to do this. We're so lucky to have them here today. They are the founders of Impact ADHD. And this isn't just for parents of kids with ADHD, but for really parents of any complex kids, it's an amazing resource. If you haven't been to their website, you need to. It is the number one place I send every parent who comes in who's has a kid with a recent diagnosis or they're struggling with parenting their complex kid. I will tell them you need to talk to Elaine and Diane right now. Go to their website immediately. And they're the founders of Sanity School, which is a great program training that really helps parents learn how to be coaches. It overlaps a lot with the kind of coaching we do with our students, but it really trains parents how to coach their kids at home, which is such a valuable part of the process. So I just love the work they're doing. I have been a huge supporter of theirs for years, and I'm so glad that they're back with us today to talk about how to parent ADHD or really any kids through the college process without nagging them. So thank you for being here.
It is great to be here always. Thanks for having us.
Thanks, Maggie.
That's my pleasure. Well, and I'd love to dive in here by talking a little bit about your experiences, just so that parents know where you all are coming from, not just professionally, although of course that's a big part of it too, but also personally. I know that you all both have navigated this process with your own kids and in very, very different ways. So I'd love to hear a little bit more about what you've learned through the process.
Diane, you want to start?
Yeah, no, and just, you know, we work with parents all the time around this concept, and a lot of parents will show up when their kid is in ninth or 10th grade going, oh my gosh, I got to get my kid ready for high school and I don't, or ready for college, and I'm not sure whether they're ready or how to handle it. And then by the time they're a junior, they're kind of in more of a crisis mode. And I think that, you know, my own personal experience, I've got two kids. One is a freshman in college right now, and one is just graduating here and a few weeks. And so I've been through it, you know, in two different, completely different ways over the last couple of years. But I think the thing that I, you know, you kind of said your own experience, the thing that I learned the most that I think we're going to talk a lot about today is that there's times that you need to be in the lead as a parent, and there's times that you need to be following as a parent. And it's about that dance of knowing and figuring out when to do both and to do it gracefully and skillfully is I think the key piece of really helping these kids to navigate what can be a really, really, really stressful time in their lives. I mean, high school is stressful. I wrote a whole article about why high school is so stressful compared to like jobs. We have one boss, they've got seven. I mean, it just really is very difficult. And so I've got a daughter with anxiety and ADHD, and her big struggle was, oh my gosh, what if I don't get accepted somewhere? What, you know, kind of, what if I don't find the perfect place? And so her reaction was, I'm going to apply everywhere. And so she figured out the kind of school she wanted. And so she literally applied to every liberal arts school under a certain size or above a certain size and under a certain size that offered free applications, just because she was afraid that she wouldn't get into one. And I just kind of let her do it. And it was important to her. And I just kind of let her take the lead on it and kind of steered her so it wasn't too much work for her. But her reaction was, oh my gosh, I've got to cover my bases just in case. And Elaine, I know you had a really different experience this year.
Very different. So I've got two kids who've gone through the process now. And I want to say not every parent has a kid. They're not all going to go through the process, because I have the oldest kid who actually never went through the process. And ended up not going to college because it wasn't the right path for that kid. But two very different experiences. My first one, another daughter with anxiety, was very much like Diane's, which is she started literally with 46 schools on her list because she started with every school that had a women's ultimate frisbee program because that was her thing. And then narrowed and narrowed and narrowed and narrowed till she got it down to 12. But when kids have anxiety, often decision-making can be really stressful. And any kind of decision making, like ordering at a restaurant, can be stressful. So, like the decision of what am I going to do for the next 4 years can be daunting. And I want to just sort of reinforce what you said, Diane, which is high school is hard enough, right? But when the most important thing for us to remember is, as stressed as we are about it, they're way more stressed than we are,
even if they don't look like it.
Right, right. Even if it may look like they're not touching it at all. And what happened with my eldest was she didn't do anything almost till the end of junior year. And it was kind of surprising, but because she was afraid to even start. Right. And that's pretty typical. If they're not doing anything, it's understanding what's behind that, because that may not be that they don't care. It may be that they care so much. Right. Anyway, so I had one who was more like Diane, and then the other, my son, who just recently went through it, really didn't want to go through the stress. He had seen his sister go through it. He had seen friends go through it, and he doesn't like stress. Mm-hmm. And so he figured out that if he could get really clear on what school he wanted and narrow it down, and then he had a school, and then he had a backup school. And the backup school, he was pretty sure he was going to get into. Then he didn't have to do 10 applications, and he didn't have to write 12 essays, and he didn't want to put himself through that. And, you know, as a parent, I could say, well, he's not trying hard enough, but I kind of had to respect, he knew himself well enough to know what was going to work for him, and it worked, right? And so the advice I would give is to meet them where they are. And just because we have a certain way that we think we should or they should go through the process, That doesn't mean that's where they are. And so we really want to understand how they think and what's important to them and help them figure out what's important to them so we can steward them through their process instead of making them go through our process.
Well, and I just want to build on that just a second because I didn't mention my oldest. And literally the way he made his college decision is somebody said, hey, this is a cool school. And he went, okay. And he just went and he applied and he was done. It was just one of those sort of, okay, I got it.
Right. And that won't work for everybody, but if you've got a kid who's easygoing and sort of knows they'll be happy anywhere, that'll work. Right.
Yeah.
And again, he didn't want the stress.
Yeah.
And you don't always have to have the stress, right? If you let go of the best possible school or finding the right fit, there is no the right fit.
Yeah.
Right. It's finding a good fit.
Yeah.
And that's a big mistake.
And if you think about when we were all in that age group and we're finishing high school, we thought that it was like the biggest decision we'd ever made, right? And now we can sit here as grownups and say, it's only 4 years of your life. Think about all the things we think about all the things that have happened since then. And obviously college is a huge influence on what happens in your life path. But when you're looking at it from the seat of, oh, this hasn't happened yet, and it's 4 years, feels like forever. Compared to now, I read an article recently was talking about the difference between how time flies when you're younger versus when you're older, and it really is based on the percentage of your life.
I was gonna say, it's the percentage of your life.
Percentage of your life, right?
Yeah. There, it's 25% of their life at this point, and for us, it's a different perspective.
It's so true. Well, and it's interesting. I think you all have a very balanced perspective about it. I do find that sometimes parents are way more stressed out about it than their kids even are. And you might have, and it's hard to tell, right? Because like you were talking about, that stress could be under the surface. Maybe that student is actually very stressed, but they know their parent has very high expectations. They have all these worries about the process. And so sometimes I'll see situations where the parent is very stressed. And that's to discuss the topic of the interview about nagging. That part of that I wanted to get into here is, what is driving parents to maybe nag their kids or do what their kids feel like is nagging and push them through the process? And how do we help avoid that? Because I don't think it ever really feels good for the parent to be nagging their kids. It definitely doesn't feel good for the kids to be nagged. And sometimes it ends up just backfiring. A lot of the kids I talk to will say, as soon as my mom comes in and says, now, what are you doing with those college applications? Where are they? I thought you were supposed to work on them by Tuesday, and it's Tuesday night, and what's happening? And they immediately want to work on them less because they just got reminded about them. So it really backfires. But I feel like parents don't know what else to do. What do you do if your kid's not working on something that's really, really important and you can see that deadline approaching and nothing's happening? How do you handle that?
Well, and let me roll back for just a second, because you said something that I think is really good as a foundation. Part of what happens in the dynamic here is the parent stuff shows up. So there's a couple of things that happens. One is catastrophizing. So it's like, oh my gosh, they're never going to get done. They can't get it done. They'll not get into a school. They'll end up on my couch when they're 7. They'll end up on the street. I mean, it's like we create all these stories, and catastrophizing is the word we use a lot, but parents go there because it's scary. These kids have had a difficult time. Most of them have had a difficult time kind of maneuvering through life up until this part. And we know how hard college is. We've been there. We know that it's not easy to navigate the social and the academic and the living on your own and all this other piece of it. So that's the first piece, is they tend to catastrophize. And the other piece is that we've got our own goals. And it's like, a lot of us are trying to live vicariously through our kids because we didn't do what we thought we would do, or we don't want them to waste their life. I mean, you can hear all the stories that we tell as parents. And so it's important to kind of honor yourself in your own stories, but know that they're stories. And ultimately what we really want is for our kids to be happy and successful according to their standards and not so much ours. And I think that that's one of the most foundational pieces of it, is to kind of really help your kid to figure out what does happiness and success look like for them and for their potential future self.
Well, and sort of playing on what you're saying, is it has to do with whose agenda are we talking about here?
Yeah, exactly.
Right. So as parents, we know our kids want to go to college oftentimes. The parents who are listening to this, more than likely, right? And so we're kind of holding that agenda for them and trying to help move them forward on their agenda, right? And what we really want at this stage is to be supporting them in moving themselves forward on their agenda. And it's a really subtle shift, but if we're pushing it, right, then it's still ours. And they don't have to pick up the mantle of it because we're holding it for them. And so a big part of this process, and the most interesting thing I think that happens senior year, is that when it works well, right, it's our job as parents to really pass the baton to our kids of their ownership of leading their lives and making their decisions and making things happen. And it's scary because there's a lot at stake, and because a lot of our kids struggle with taking up the mantle and doing these things. And yet if we don't empower them to begin to learn to do it, they're going to get there and not have these decision-making and problem-solving skills in place because we haven't helped them practice them because we've been doing it for them. So the real key here with this whole concept of nagging is, if it doesn't feel good to us, like if we're feeling irritated or aggravated or stressed or whatever, you know, as Diane says, that's our stuff. And we really should pay attention to it, because that may mean that we're owning it more than they are.
Yeah, well, and I want to jump in here because I could just hear all the parents there, but he's not engaged yet. He's not interested. He's not... Right. He's not going to carry the ball. He's not, you know, he's not ready. Or even if they have an understanding, if it's a child with executive function challenges, even if they have an understanding of the immaturity or the maturity that it takes to be able to own it, they're sitting there going, but they can't. And so here's the thing we want to talk about a little bit, is that all of us as parents can really see what it looks like when we're driving the process. I can tell them what to do when this comes next, and I reward you when it gets done. High five, great job. I can drive and I can keep it going. And as parents, we have this vision of a kid who can actually handle it all themselves. And I don't know if any of you who are listening had a kid who kind of went through this college application process independently and did it. My daughter was kind of in between, but we have this vision of them taking the baton and owning it, and, you know, I got this, and they call us and tell us when it's done, and yay, we celebrate to dinner, go out to
that's
dinner.
That's what we want, right?
That's what we want, right? So we have a vision for what it looks like to control, and we have a vision for what it looks like to be completely independent, but the magic really sits in the middle. And it's really about not sharing the load with your kids, but helping your child to become more independent so that they have these skills. It's ultimately not about the college application process. It's about figuring out, helping your kid to figure out what their agenda is for whatever, and take ownership of it as much as they can, and ask for help in those places that they can't, and kind of move through a process.
So in our Saying School program, we teach this the notion that there are four roles that a parent plays, right? Four stages that a parent goes through. And what Diane's talking about is, you know, we're all very familiar with the first phase, which is telling them what to do. And we know where we want to end up in the fourth phase, which is they're living their lives and they're coming to us for sage wisdom and advice, right? And it's that the dance in the middle, that's what all of this conversation is about, is how do we have these conversations with them in a way that empowers them to take ownership without pushing back at us or feeling pressured by us. And it's a subtle shift in, some of it's a subtle shift in language and style and approach. One of the things we talk about is a notion called a design, sort of designing how are we going to go through a process with each other, right? Because I want to bring us into some strategy to help parents figure out how do you step into that middle magic that Diane's talking about, right? And the first place is to really be conscious of the conversations that you're having. And Diane and I were talking about this some because we both use these skills in very different ways because we're very different kinds of parents, right? But they work for each of us separately, we just use them differently. So the notion of the design is to have conversations that we tend to avoid and sort of make assumptions, right? We have a tendency in our life to not say things out loud and then get frustrated or upset when somebody doesn't do what we thought in our head they were going to do.
Well, so it's a conversation about the process, not the conversation about what's happening in the process. So it's not about, did you get this done? What are the things to do? The first conversation is really, you know, what is it going to be like to go through this process of applying? What are the different steps? How do we want to work together? How, you know, it's kind of setting the stage at the very beginning to say, okay, there's a lot of stuff here. It's like imagine the most complex project you've had in any class that you've had up till now. This is as complex as that has been. And so what were all the steps? Remember in fifth grade when your teacher wrote down all the different things you needed to do when you took them one at a time, right? The rubric, right? And so it's the conversation before the conversation and kind of really setting the stage. And again, I'm hearing you parents go, my kid won't even talk to me about this stuff. Part of this is about building relationship and building trust. And the good thing about not nagging is that it builds trust. And so if we can get to a space where we're not in their face with their stuff all the time, they will allow us in more often. And it sounds counterintuitive, but the more you let go, the more you're welcomed in with these kids.
That's right. So here's the strategy. Write this down. Ready? You start by giving them a gift. Here's what you can count on me for. This is what I'm willing to do. This is what I can offer. You make an offer first. You always start. It diffuses defensiveness. For those of you who say my kids won't talk to me or they don't want to talk about this, like if you start by saying, this is what I will give you in this process. And here's what I'm asking for. This is what I need from you. So the second question is, this is what I need. And this is what I'm asking for. So first the gift, then the ask. Then you're taking them off the defensive and you can really open up a different kind of conversation. So it might sound something like, I get that this process is daunting and overwhelming, and you can count on me to do my best not to nag you in the process and to let it you lead. And what I need from you is to ask for the help you need and help me understand how to support you. That might be
even to be open to what I need is for you to be open to regular conversations about how it's going.
Even though it sounds annoying that we have to check in with each other.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah. So it's this sort of, I can't help you if we aren't regularly checking in, right? You know, and so check-ins are different than nagging because we've agreed to when we'll do it instead of me just kind of swooping in and saying, did you do this? Did you do that? Is this done? Where are you at?
But if you start with a conversation in advance that designs it, then they've bought into the system that you're working on. Yeah. So it's no longer your agenda nagging them. It's we agreed to. How's this working? Let's check in. So this is what you can count on me for, and this is what I need from you to help us be successful in it.
So I'm hearing all the parents again, Elaine, because they're all going, yeah, but they're going to promise all this stuff and then they'll never get it done. They never do. And it's always this hard thing, right? And so then the next step, once you've kind of reached the agreement, is to find ways to hold each other, honestly, accountable for going through the process. And so you want them to hold you accountable for not nagging and yep. say, hey, mom, it feels like you're really kind of micromanaging. And my son does this to me all the time. This feels a little bit like micromanaging. And I'll say, okay, sorry. How can I hold you accountable for making sure this is done and help you feel like you're independent in this process? You know, so we have, again, it's that back to that design. And you're having conscious conversations about how you're working together and not about, and as much as you're having about getting this stuff done.
And what you just spoke to is really important, which is you start at the beginning with the design about the process. And then as you're into the process, you're designing again and again and again, right? You keep using this strategy. I use it to get my kid to take out the trash. I mean, you can use it for anything, right? This is what you can count on me for. This is what I need from you, right? So taking out the trash, you can count on me to remind you it's Monday night. I need you to do it without complaining so that we're not facing a problem Tuesday morning. It's much more collaborative with them, right?
And that's really where the next step is. It's about accountability and scaffolding, right? So one of the things that we talked about, how daunting this piece can be, once, if you start with the design and then you move into the process, and you're not talking about, you know, at the very beginning, you're like, here are all the things that need to be done over the next 3 months. And really holding them accountable for outlining and getting really clear at the very beginning, setting some goals if they can, or at least putting some, you know, points in the road along the way. They aren't waiting until November to, you know, do the thing that's due on December 1st. They've thought through, okay, so I've got till December to get it done, but what's my goal in terms of getting it done? And how do I want to check in with you to make sure that I'm achieving the goals that I want to accomplish through the process?
Right. And the scaffolding is what comes in after you've sort of designed and you know what they need and what you need from each other. Then you step into, this is what you're doing and this is what I've agreed to do, or this is what you've asked me to do, or however that sort of plays out. What I'm thinking about as you were saying that is how important it is to redesign so that they're continuously asking for the check-in, because that's how it becomes not a nag.
Right.
Is if they're asking for, in the design, if they're asking for us to have, to work with them or support them, then we're not nagging them because it's their agenda.
Or even if they agree to, right? So if we agree to a check-in every Saturday evening, or it's like, let's go to Waffle House every Saturday through this process and check in. You know, it's this sort of, you know, and they know in advance, you have permission to have the conversation. And then it's this sort of, well, what are we going to do if you're not where you want to be? You know, you have that conversation ahead of time. It's this sort of, okay, so if we check in next, yeah, this is what you want to do this week. If we check in on Saturday and you don't have it done, how do we want to handle it? Well, there's going to be some kids that go, I've got it, mom. I trust that you've got it. It's not that I doubt it, but if we have the conversation now about what will happen, we won't be in conflict about it. We'll be in agreement about it.
Yeah. Well, and what that speaks to, and then I want to pause and Maggie sort of check in with, because we're just going, right?
I don't want to interrupt because it's so helpful. So keep going for now. And then, yeah,
What that speaks to is making sure that we're, you know, we design at the beginning, but making sure we're dealing with one issue at a time, and we're not. So, you know, when we're talking about homework, right, we talk about chunking, right, breaking things down into little pieces. And part of the problem with this process is it's so big, it can be overwhelming. And then parents get stressed out because they haven't done anything, right? And if we know that all we're working on in the next 2 weeks is researching colleges or deciding what your criteria are, or identifying 10 schools or narrowing your list down to 15 schools, whatever the next step is, then we can focus on accountability with them for the next step, not the whole process.
Which is much easier.
And way more manageable. Where we get freaked out as parents is when, and overwhelmed, is when we try to eat the whole elephant, right? Instead of taking it one bite at a time. You know, when parents come to us and say, mornings, I can't handle mornings. Well, I can't help you fix mornings. But if we can break it down to, is it getting out of bed? Is it setting an alarm? Is it brushing teeth? Is, like, if you can break it down into individual pieces and work on one thing at a time, you can see success and you feel the success and the kids feel the success and that builds on it, on itself. So we want to agree to the big picture, and then we want to focus on the next step, not always on the whole process.
Well, and I think that this comes back to the four roles, Elaine, right? So it's that sort of, we can see what micromanaging looks like and we can push them through. And when they say, I've got it, we want to go, okay, you've got it. I'm out of here and I'll see you in November. Reality is that there are very few kids that can go from July to November and get through this entire process independently. They need you there to hold them accountable and to help them break it apart and to check in with them, and because it's daunting and overwhelming.
Or maybe just to support them in it. So it may be, okay, great, what do you need from me? How can I help? Right? That's such a powerful parenting question, because how can I help is not about, I'm going to make sure you do what you said you were going to do, young man, right? How can I help is, I believe you've got this. What resources would you need? How can I support you in it? I've got your back.
Well, and I've got you back. Right. And asking your kid to give you a job can be really helpful, right?
Yeah.
And so even if your job is, okay, I know you're spending 3 hours on your computer tonight working on X, Y, and Z. My job's going to be to bring you popcorn and ice cream at 10 p.m., you know, and to make sure that you know what time it is so you don't end up staying up to 1 in the morning,
right?
Right? And so it's, you may suggest, okay, so here are 3 things that I could do for you, but give me a job, you know, yeah. Or, you know, because our kids are going to be like, no, I've got it. And they really do need help.
And we do want to be in the conversation with them. So sometimes offering popcorn and ice cream, you know, it seems extraneous, but it's actually keeping us engaged and keeping the relationship built and keeping them knowing we're on their team, so that when they do need us, because they may not need us in that phase, but they may need us on the next phase. When they do need us, they're not as hesitant to ask for it because we've been offering it and we've been doing it kind of light and playful.
Mm-hmm. Right. Well, and I love the way you all are describing this because it sounds much more collaborative and much less contentious and like a scenario that would be much less likely to turn into something that would resemble nagging. Mm-hmm. And I feel like it's a very big shift for a lot of parents relative to the way they would typically approach things. So this, I'm wondering if we could do an example or two of a scenario or a conversation that would typically turn into an argument or nagging somebody to get something done. And I can give you a couple examples of things I've seen with students, if that would be helpful.
Let me start you with one, because I'm thinking of a client I worked with a few years ago. Okay, mom of a senior daughter who was applying to art school. And the mom was very, I don't want to say OCD, but was very organized and structured and, you know, businesswoman. And the daughter was an artist applying to art school. So you can already imagine what that dynamic was like, right? And it wasn't that the kid wasn't on it. It's that applying to art school means putting together a portfolio. It means there's a lot of other stuff that's involved. And when the mom understood that, what needed to shift was this kid was a visual processor, and this kid needed to have stuff out and visual so she could see it to put together her portfolio. And so what the mom had to stop nagging was putting everything away. Because this kid needed to not put everything away every night, because it meant she had to start over every day. And so the negotiation, the navigation for them was around what the kid's process was and the mom supporting her in that process instead of her needing it to be tidy and organized, right? Mm-hmm. And so the shift there was the mom actually accepting that for a little while her dining room was not going to be what she wanted it to be, because it was what was enabling her daughter to be independent in the process.
Well, and what's coming up for me as you're saying that, Elaine, and I'm going back to your word collaboration and the fact that this feels like very collaborative sort of thing. As parents, we need to actually exercise that collaboration muscle more. And I'm going to put a commercial in for those of you who have kids that are a little bit younger. this is the key. Strengthen your relationship. Make sure that you are working together well so that when you have to have the difficult conversations, it's not this. It's, okay, we're having a difficult conversation now. You know, how do we navigate through it? And it can be things like just collaborating. Like when my daughter was kind of, I needed her to be able to collaborate with me. It's like, let's make dinner together. Right. And so we're already making dinner together, and it's something we can collaborate together easily on. It kind of takes our mind off of the college stuff, and it gets us working and talking and, hey, you got this, I got that. What's the next thing on the recipe? You know, kind of you're working together. And so those of you with a little bit younger kids, exercising that muscle of working together, playing games together that are not competitive, but are collaborative, kind of figuring out how to create that environment where you can work with your kid on other stuff. And then letting go enough so that, again, as what I was saying earlier, the more we can let go and get out of that I'm in charge mode as a mom, mm-hmm. give them control, give them power, ask them questions instead of telling them what to do. That gives you more space to kind of get invited into their process when they've been, no, 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 I've got it. Because most of our kids are no, 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 I've got it because we've been telling them what to do.
So I want to go back. So now give us another scenario and see if that will help.
Yeah. So I run into scenarios where there's a student who's maybe not following through with something. So one recent conversation I had was with a mom who purchased some SAT prep materials for her son, and he's not touched them and isn't using them, and he's not doing any of his SAT prep. And she's kind of secretly panicking. I know, surprise, surprise, right? And it's a student with ADHD who has difficulties managing his time and structuring his time, and he has classes going on. And so it's tough for him. But for in her mind, she's just looking at it and saying, this SAT prep is important. We've paid for this. You're not using it. I've also seen that for parents with the essays, where I know you need to be working on the essays and the summer is progressing and you're not doing it, or you need to have your college list and the summer is progressing and you're not doing it. And those are the scenarios where I can just feel the stress level going up and up and up. And I know this is going to turn into, why haven't you been doing this conversation? And I'm wondering how you'd turn a conversation like that an argument like that into a conversation where it is more about the process or about how are we approaching it? How do you shift that so that it becomes more of a discussion?
Well, so Diane, I can't wait to hear where you're going with it. What comes up for me, I'll just say initially, every scenario you gave is an example of it's the parent's agenda. Mm-hmm. The parents decided what needed to be done, and the parent is trying to hold the kid accountable to what they want done. The parent thinks the essay needs to be done months in advance because everybody tells them that that's how it has to be. The parent thinks he has to do an SAT prep because he's got to get those scores up. Like, does the kid want to get his scores up? Is that important to him? What's in it for him? What's his buy-in to the process? Because right now what you're describing is a ton of scenarios where the parent's really upset about is that the kid's not following their process. And that tells me that it's a parent that hasn't yet figured out what's important to the kid in the process. Diane, what would you
Right. So then it's so exactly that. So it's about buy-in. So the first thing is, you know, are they bought into the SAT prep and the, and you know, kind of what is their vision for when the essays are going to be done and how long it's really going to realistically take them? You know, do they have, a lot of these kids have magical thinking, right? So they think I can do this essay in 5 minutes on a Thursday night. And some of them can. I mean, some of them it just have that sort of stream of consciousness and can do that. And you want to have somebody review it before you send it in and all these other pieces of it, right? That sort of thing. So the first step is really kind of gauging buy-in. And a lot of these kids do have buy-in. A lot of these kids are like, I do want to get my SAT scores up. I know that if I do, then I can get into this school instead of that school. And it's not about getting buy-in for the SAT prep. It's about buy-in for going through the process.
Right? So let me give you an example on it. Can I pull it? So, because I went through that with my son, right? And so what we sat down and talked about was, are you happy with your scores or do you want to pick them up? Well, I'd like to pick them up a little bit, but I'm pretty good, but I think I could. And so we negotiated. We talked about what are the options? Do you want to do a full class? Do you want, you know, just one or two sessions? What do you really feel like you need to know? And what he figured out is what he needed to know was what's the process for each of the tests. He was trying to decide which test to do. So he needed to know what the test taking strategies were for the ACT versus the SAT. So he could just, you know, so once he figured it out, he was able to say, okay, now that I'm done with this, I want I want a tutorial session for someone to teach me how to navigate this test, right? He was totally in ownership of it. It was what he wanted to do. And so therefore he was successful with it. And I wasn't sitting there frustrated saying he hasn't done anything to prepare for the SAT, because we were talking about it and I figured out, I helped him figure out what he wanted to do to be successful. He did want to be successful.
Right. What I'm also pulling out of what you're saying, Elaine, is that SAT prep is this big, giant thing, and it doesn't feel like it, but there's so many ways to approach it. And do they need content information? And do they need math content information? And do they need year two algebra regroup? I mean, there's
or
all
trigonometry,
or it may just be navigating through the test itself. And so, okay, you know, thinking together about, well, what does it mean to do SATs prep? And what are the things that it takes to be successful on the SAT? It's not just you need to take SAT prep, because they won't attach to it the same way as if they know, yeah, I really bombed the math part of the PSAT. And I think it's because it took me too long and I didn't have time to finish the last questions, which is what happened to my daughter. When she finally figured out the way that they asked the math questions, she breezed through it in a completely different way because she was getting stuck on the way they were writing the questions. And so what she needed was somebody to kind of unravel, well, what do they mean when they say this? Oh, wow. Now all of a sudden the world opens up.
So the bottom line of this is, if we start with the end, with the solution, right, then we're holding them accountable to the solution. And what we really need to do with these kids in this situation and in all situations, is get the vision of the end goal and then hold them accountable to figuring out what the process is to get there, right?
And the next
the end goal here, so what's the change they really want to see is improve the scores of the SAT. If we hold them accountable to doing an SAT prep, that's a solution. But if we hold them accountable to improving the SAT scores, then you can problem solve and find the best solution to achieve that goal. So part of the problem is that we have to set goals that are about the change we want, not setting a goal to be a particular structure. So the other example you used was essays, right? The goal is to have an essay refined, cleaned up, ready, or however many essays by X date. Right. So what's it going to do? What's it going to take to get there to October 1st or whatever that is? Or we're applying to the school rolling admission, whatever. Right. Once you know what that goal is, then you back up and you say, OK, what is it going to take to get there? But if we're only taking aim on getting the essay done this summer, we're missing the opportunity to problem solve with them to figure out what's the process to get the essay done and what time frame do they need. And that's what we really want to be teaching them, is being in the process of figuring this stuff out. Does that make sense for
you? It does make sense. It definitely does. Well, and I like this distinction between accountability for the outcome versus committing to figure out the process together, because then you're really inviting them into, you did a lot of thinking in your head as a parent to figure out that I want them to get the SAT prep done and I want them to get it done in this way by this date and this time and this format. But they weren't invited into that decision-making process, then they don't have that skill. So what happens when they go off to college and they have an exam they need to study for, but they're not used to doing the thinking to come up with how they're supposed to go about that? If you can invite them into that process, what strikes me about the way that you all are sharing this is they're getting to learn from you because you're modeling the process and you're doing it with them. You're so then they can see how you solve problems.
You're thinking with them, not for them.
Mm-hmm. Right.
I mean, what you just said is brilliant. It's like, it's not, we have been doing the thinking for them for so long. That's the habit we're in. Mm-hmm. And we actually have to be the one to break that habit, right? Because they're going to ask us to break that habit, and then we're going to get resentful and all reactive, right, and all sorts of lovely dynamics are going to happen. But if we decide, no, I'm going to shift from thinking for them to collaboratively thinking with them and help them do that with me, it changes everything.
Well, and I love that because you're also not going to the other extreme of expecting them to take over all the thinking. And I do find sometimes that will happen where parents will say, okay, I'm not going to nag, so I'm just going to be totally hands off. But just
You're on your own.
To your point, is so overwhelming. It's so stressful. I mean, I'm sure parents who have been watching along with the videos are going to already know that. So I'm not telling them anything new, but there's so many components of this and there's so many pieces. And so to hand that over to a child who
not ready
is not even, I mean, their brain isn't even fully mature yet, and just say, okay, good luck navigating this and tell me if you need me. They're going to get so overwhelmed.
The term I would use there is that we're not setting them up for success.
Right.
We're holding them accountable to an end goal or an outcome, but we're not helping them learn how to get there. And mm-hmm. I was just talking to a mom, this isn't about college application. It's about helping a kid finish a class his freshman year of college, right? Like it's the same thing. You can say, well, you got to get a B in that class or you can't go back to school, or you got to get whatever it is. Or you can say, let's agree to, it makes sense you might be able to get a C in this class. Let's talk about what do we need to do? What do you need to do? And how can we support you? Or what supports can you get to accomplish that? Because it's that incremental process of achieving their goals that we want to teach them again and again and again. These are kids who need to learn how to put processes in place for themselves, because the way their brains are wired, they don't know how, and it's hard for them.
Mm-hmm.
So if we do that work for them, they're not learning.
Well, and one other thing I wanted to touch on, because we've been assuming throughout that the kids do actually want to go to college, and we're just nagging them because we want them to do it a different way, or we want them to do it faster, or we want them to do it differently. But what if, and you mentioned this at the very beginning, Elaine, that you have one of your children who did not actually end up deciding to go to college, and I'm thinking through a scenario where maybe a parent is nagging about college, and there's this underlying fear on the student's part that maybe they're not ready or maybe they don't want to go. And so all the pushback and the resistance is coming from a place of, I don't know that I even want to go, but I don't know how to tell you this, mom, because I'm afraid you're going to freak out on me if I tell you that I don't feel like I'm ready and maybe I don't want to go at all. So I was wondering, what do we do about that? If how do you find out if your kid actually doesn't maybe want to go and that's why they're pushing back and you're having to nag them all the time?
Well, and I think that one of the things that actually both Elaine and I have kids who did gap years. And so I think that that's the other piece of it. And I think that the construct of a gap year, because gap years are now really pretty acceptable and as an alternative, just introducing the concept to the kids and saying, you know, do you feel like you're ready to go to college? Or, you know, is that something you want to do right now? And it's not something you're taking the pressure off, because it's not, will you go to college? Yes or no. Mm-hmm. Right. It's this sort of, do you feel that college is the right next step when the day you finish high school, you know, and kind of getting them think to the next day and the next day and the next day, because a lot of these kids, when the application process is starting, you're like at the end of your junior year, mm-hmm. there's an enormous amount of maturity that happens in that senior year. Many of them might be ready in that 12-month period, but some of them won't. And so it's hard to know at that moment, will they be ready? And you've got to make the decisions in the moment and not, but wait, it's going to happen. And the clock's going to pass. So Elaine, what would you say?
I mean, we had two kids who did gap years, each of us, mm-hmm. for very different reasons, right? One, because my daughter said, if I don't take a break, I'm going to burn out, because she's an intense student. She has dyslexia and, you know, and so that's a very different reason from, I need a little extra time to get ready to go, right?
Yeah.
So we're big proponents, obviously, of gap years, and it's ironic to me that this year neither of our kids are taking them.
Yeah.
But so part of it is it's stepping back to that initial conversation of what do they want. Like I have one of the kids graduating with my son this year. Everybody else is going to college. He's in college prep school. One kid's going to firefighter school. Like, and I don't know those parents, but I gotta give him props,
yeah.
you know, because this kid knew what she wanted, and it wasn't to continue on an academic course. She knew what she wanted to do, right? My kid knew what they wanted to do. And so I was able to support that process because it wasn't, first of all, my kid was struggling, had a really hard time with school, and it was really a hard, hard experience for them. But because there was a clarity of a path, and, you know, is it possible that they could have, you know, come back later and gone to college? Sure. Is it possible that was never going to be the thing? Probably in this case. But if I was willing to say, what's important to you and what are you doing to work forward on your path? And support them instead of my idea it was really hard to look at my kid and say, you're this really bright, capable kid. What do you mean you're not going to college? That was hard. And it was the right choice for that kid because that's what that kid needed. And as soon as we shifted from, no, we got to go see another school to, all right, let's just follow your path. As long as they were working on their path, you know, how can I argue with that? But I can't say it's easy. It's a really hard shift to make if that's the mindset you've been in all your life.
Well, and the other side of it falls out too, because there's parents who say, oh, my kid couldn't make it in college. I'm going to, you know, they need to go to the army or they need to go do this. So they need, you know, it's like we get these preconceived notions of our kids and it's, we can step back a little bit and let them lead. Even if they wander a little bit, it needs to be okay that they might wander a little bit, but follow
lead
the kid.
Them where they are. Right. Yeah. Back to that, which we talked about at the beginning. It really is about, by the time they're 17, 18, 19 years old, y'all, this is their life. And it's really not ours to control. It's ours to influence and to support and to encourage and to empower. But they're on their path. And the more that we can support them on their journey and not try to force them to take some journey that we thought they were going to be on, the happier they're going to be and the more successful they're going to be.
Mm-hmm. That's very beautifully said. And I think wonderful context for everything that we're sharing in this whole series. Yeah. Because if parents take all of this insight the wrong way and they say, oh, we've got all these great tips and now we're going to go make our kids do these things and nag them to death. This is not what we want you all to do. So I'm so glad you've been watching this interview and please encourage everyone else to watch it too, because I do think there's just, we talk about how stressful the college process is and a lot of it is because of the way that we're navigating it and the way that we're pushing kids to do it our way instead of listening to what they want or the way that they want to do it. We're collaborating with them to figure out what that's going to look like, because maybe they don't know either, and maybe we don't know. And so we're going to figure it out together, and that's going to be a wonderful exercise that helps them learn and grow as a human being. So thank you for sharing this, because I feel like without this piece, it would be so much more stressful. And with this piece of curiosity and just meeting them where they are, it can be such a really a relationship building process rather than a stressful process.
And so that's the cool thing, right? So that's the extra bonus. So you've spent the senior year working together and accomplishing something in collaborative environment. And that feels great because these kids are going to be away from home for, you know, many of them. And so it's, you know, you're at the same time, you're connecting the dots and knowing, okay, I'm going to have to let go over this year.
Mm-hmm. And you're setting yourself up for success and for relationship when they do leave home.
Yeah. Exactly.
Right. Which could be its whole other interview in and of itself for another time.
Yeah.
Oh, well, thank you so much. This has been so interesting. And I know I mentioned your website at the beginning, impactadhd.com, and definitely recommend people check that out. And I know there's also a special resource that you all wanted to give to our viewers in particular. So did you want to tell them a little bit more about that so we can make sure?
Yeah. So we talked a lot about stress through this whole process. And so we've got a great tip sheet that helps parents kind of identify some of the signals that their kids might be really stressed out in this process. And so if they go to impactadhd.com/college, they can get a tip sheet on how to recognize schoolwork stress.
And it's a tip sheet we created with a doctor named Jerome Schultz, who wrote a fabulous book. He's sort of the lead thinker on ADHD and anxiety in particular in relation to schools, Jerome Schultz from Harvard. So it's a really nice collaborative tip sheet. So I encourage you to take advantage of it.
And we will post a link to it below this video too. So if you all want to get a copy, you can just click right there or just go to impactadhd.com/college. to get a copy. And it is really helpful because sometimes stress doesn't show up the way you think it does. We talked a little bit about this during the interview and didn't dig into it in too much detail, but sometimes your kid looking like they don't care or like they're just disengaged or they don't want to get involved in it can actually be stress in disguise. So it's really important to figure out what the signs of stress actually are so you don't misread it and end up nagging them when you really should be just getting curious about what's going on for them and how you can support them. So like I said before, if you don't have someone in your life who has not watched this video or who's worried that they're nagging their kids or who's getting stressed out about the process, please share this with them. We really want to help as many families as possible reduce their stress in the college process and help it be their kids' process and not theirs, not their agenda, but really meeting their kids where they are and coaching them through the way that you all do so beautifully and help your clients do every day. So please share this. The replay will be up for 48 hours on our event page. And you can also get a copy of it to keep forever. If you would like, just go to yourteenreadyforcollege.com/event. And that will get you all the videos, all the transcripts, all the bonuses from our speakers, which does include a gift from Elaine and Diane as well. And it's all $100 off right now. So you can get a copy of that on our event page as well. So thanks again for joining us. This has been so wonderful and a really great compliment to this series. So thank you for joining.
Truly, thanks for having us.
Have a great day, everyone. I'll see you soon.